So I learned to keep my mouth shut, until eventually I was big and strong enough to fight back. I was 16. My eyes ran over his torso frantically. Shame crawled into me when I realized it wasn't only sorrow I felt. Butterflies flung their tiny wings in my chest, and my nipples puckered. I liked what I was seeing. He was perfectly imperfect, flawlessly flawed. Most importantly, he was vicious. You never told anyone else? The police? A teacher? His dead eyes blinked once.
There wasn't much point by then. Joe and my dad were traveling a lot, and Daryl was barely ever around.
Drugs. He shrugged.
He died shortly after you left town. Overdosed and drowned in his own jacuzzi.
He tilted his head sideways.
Shame.
A shiver broke down my spine. I remembered every word of their conversation that first day in the library. No, Vicious was incapable of killing someone. But was he really? I didn't want to ask him about it, both because I wasn't ready for his answer, and because it would have caused another moral debate, and my head was aching as it was. Vicious. I was breathless. He moved toward me. Our bodies touched. I wanted to melt into him, but knew better than to give in to that temptation. He was so haunted and troubled. And on top of everything else, he was still hateful to me. For Lord's sake, the man still referred to me as help. Yet, when his body pressed against mine, warm and comforting, nothing like the man it belonged to, I couldn't pull away. We were flush against each other, but his arms were at his sides. We were both liars, telling ourselves that as long as we didn't use hands, this didn't count. Only it did. In my heart, it did.
It's a mess, but it's my mess,
he said.
I won't drag you into this shit in court. Joe doesn't deserve a penny, but whatever happens with the will, this stays between me and her.
He dropped his eyes to my lips. He was so close, I was able to taste the saltiness of his warm, naked skin and the heat of his mouth.
You get out of this unscathed. I know you think I'm a piece of shit, and you have a good reason to, but I'm not asking you to perjure yourself. I would never complicate your life like that. Never. I just need you to help me frighten Joe enough to back off if there's a problem with the will.
Torn, I shook my head. I'm sure your friends can help you just as much, if not more.
They don't know,
he said.
I haven't told them. Not about Daryl Ryler. Not about Joe. I'm not proud of this help. I let them do this to me. For years. You're the only one who knows. Other than Eli Cole and a shrink I hired myself a few years ago.
I could have told him a lot of things, but it wasn't his fault, that there was nothing to be ashamed of, that he wasn't alone. But I knew Vicious well enough to know that wasn't what he wanted to hear. He was too proud for a pep talk. What he wanted was cooperation. Then ask your psychiatrist, I said.
That would be very messy, very expensive, and very public. No, this is personal. Private. I want to deal with Joe quietly, and we both know you can keep a secret.
Pink. Black. How do I know you're not lying? I made my voice stone cold, ignoring the compliment. But this made sense. I knew what I heard in the library all those years ago. But after Vicious's behavior toward me, I'd chosen to believe it was just an ugly family argument.
You don't. You'll have to trust me.
And what on earth have you ever done to make me think you're trustworthy? I wrinkled my nose, taking a step away. Being so close to him wasn't helping. The back of his hand brushed my cheek, and my heart leaped. I retreated again.
I was an asshole. But I never lied to you. Not once. Josephine came after my family's money with her brother, and she did some nasty stuff to get what she wanted. This is payday for her, but not in the way she hopes it will be.
I closed my eyes, shaking my head. When I didn't answer, he took my hand and pulled me toward a chair. It was 5 in the morning, and I'd lost my appetite for the written word.
Stay.
Why? I demanded.
Because I order you to.
No. He dipped his head down and shook it, exhaling sharply.
Fuck. Then do it because I want you to. It's been a long day. Don't decide right now. Just sit here while I work and get used to seeing my sour-ass face again. I won't try and bribe you again. Instead, I'll ask that you think about what you, Amelia, consider as justice. Because I know you're good, and I know I'm bad. But at the end of the day, I suspect we have the exact same moral code.
I perched on the chair across from his, but only because I was too shocked to continue standing. Vicious's confession, combined with the fact I suspected Ryler hadn't really died a natural death, almost paralyzed me completely. I slowly reached for a leather-bound book on the corner of the table. I raised an eyebrow at him when I spotted the title on the spine. Little Women? He only shrugged. I opened the book, but didn't really read anything. Every few seconds, my eyes would drift back to Vicious. His gaze was still on the screen when he said,
Is there something else on your mind, help?
I hated that we were back to what we were before his confession. Am I an idiot for sitting here with you? I asked, honestly interested to know what he made of this whole situation. A ghost of a smile passed across his face.
You're a lot of things. An idiot has never been one of them.
Then what am I?
You're...
He looked up, inspecting me. Sometimes people could communicate with a stare alone, and his eyes said, mine, but his mouth said,
complicated. You're complex. It's not a bad thing.
I wanted to tell him that he didn't deserve my help, that I hated him. But that wasn't the truth. At least not the latter. Even if I was considering lying for him, I didn't want to make a habit out of it. So I just kept my mouth shut. He tangled his leg with mine purposely under the table, daring me to pull away. I didn't. I liked his warmth. I liked his long, muscular leg laced with mine. I liked how after a few minutes of pressing his leg harder into my calf, he used his knee to nudge my legs apart. I let out a sigh. But all throughout, he didn't look at me, not even once. I pretended to keep reading, and he tapped the table with a chewed pen. My hands tightened on the book when I recognized the name printed on the pen side. I realized that it was my pen, the pen I'd used when he came to McCoy's. Then he lifted his eyes and sent me another relaxed smile.
By the way, I took it upon myself to tell your little friend Rochelle that you won't be returning to the bar for any more shifts. I trust you girls can live off your current salary. You're all mine now, LeBlanc, and you're welcome.
Chapter 14. Vicious. It happened. I fell under. After staying awake for 84 hours straight, my body finally gave in and completely shut down. It happened in my old bedroom, and I barely made it into bed, but I did. I was still shirtless, mainly because I liked how she looked at me when I was working and she was reading. But it was morning, and I knew that I was going to sleep for a long time, and that sooner or later she'd realize that something was wrong, that people don't just disappear for so many hours in the middle of the day. I woke up 13 hours later, and it was evening again. There was noise coming from the broad hallway outside my room, and I hoped it was help, even though I knew it wasn't. I was right, of course. It was my father's nurses, Josh and Slade. They were arguing among themselves about the Raiders and the Patriots, and I was not impressed. The two fuckers had woken me up. I passed by the beefy men and walked straight into my father's bedroom. He must have been discharged from the hospital and returned while I was asleep. And surprise, surprise, Joe was still nowhere to be found. Guess Cabo was more important than standing by your man in his final weeks, or days. The gravity of the situation weighed heavy on my shoulders, but this was what I'd waited for so long, ever since I was 12. Now it was time. Daryl was dead, Dad was dying, and soon Josephine's life would be over too. I kept the door open. The nurses glanced my way but continued bickering in the hall, flinging their arms around as they talked football. "Hey, Dad," I smiled, leaning a shoulder against his wall with my hands tucked inside my pockets. I rested my head beside a Charles-Edouard Dubois painting. It was good, but I liked Amelia's shit better, and enjoyed the view. The man who'd ruined my life looked like a cheap carbon copy of the man he used to be. Completely bald, pallid in color, with a neck like a lizard's, his veins sticking out from his saggy, thin skin. I looked nothing like him and exactly like my mother, which I guess was part of the reason why Joe hated my guts. "Don't lie, son. Joe and Daryl would never do such a thing," he told me when I showed him my scars, my wounds, my pain. "She locks me in there with him," I argued for the millionth time. "Joe says you do it to yourself. Is this about attention, Baron? Is that what you want?" I didn't need attention. I'd needed a different fucking father. "Are you hanging in there?" I smirked at Baron Sr. now, painfully aware of the men behind me. He blinked his eyes but said nothing because he couldn't. I, on the other hand, had plenty to say. I knew my words could possibly kill him. I didn't care. "Sorry I dropped in unannounced. I needed to see Eli Cole about your will." As far as Dad knew, he and I were on good terms. Last time I'd seen him, I still even feigned interest in his business and his health, but it was showtime. Revenge time. I ambled into his room and took a seat at the edge of his bed. The bastard wasn't going to spill a word about it. Was I the primary beneficiary? Was Joe? There were a lot of fucking millions on the line here. Dad's power was in his money. That's how he'd controlled his wives, and that's how he thought he'd gained my respect. He was wrong. As usual. "You know, it's going to be interesting to see how much you left Joe. You always kept your cards close to your chest, used your wealth for power. I bet you made her agree to that draconian prenup before you even sucked her tits, huh?" I winked playfully, my lips curving into a slight smirk. He didn't respond, but breathed hard. Yeah, the Spencer men were lawyers by training, and they liked women, but they fucking loved money. "Nah. I bet you did the right thing by her. From your point of view, at least. Not from mine. The fact that you killed Mom kinda changes everything." I jutted my lower lip out, gauging him for a reaction. Until then, he didn't know I knew. Didn't know that I'd overheard him and Joe talking in the library before it happened. Dad's eyes grew big and perplexed, then darted to the hallway helplessly, but it was futile. From where the nurses were positioned, the situation looked innocent. A son softly speaking to his ailing father. "Are you sure your brother will keep his mouth shut? I can't risk anyone knowing. Even a whiff of suspicion could destroy my business dealings." "Baby, it won't, I promise you. I'm not a bad man, Josephine. But I don't want this burden for the rest of my life." It was a year after my mother got seriously injured in a car accident that left her a quadriplegic. I was 9. Way too young to understand what it meant. I didn't know what to make of it then, so I'd collected every word said behind the library door where I'd eavesdropped until the puzzle was complete. By the age of 10, I knew that conversation by heart. By the age of 12, I also knew exactly what it meant.
"Trust me, Daryl will help you. I'm telling you, darling, no one will ever know. Anyway, people have no right to judge. You may as well be married to a garden vegetable."
"I don't know, Joe. I don't know."
"Baby," she purred. "Honey, you can't divorce her at this point. We both know that ship sailed as soon as she had the accident. What's there to think about? You'll be doing her a favor anyway, if you ask me. She can't even scratch her nose anymore.
What about Baron Jr.? What about my son?"
"What about him?"
she snapped.
"Aren't I good enough for him? Trust me, he'll barely remember her when he grows up."
I stared at what had become of my father since Joe and her brother had entered our lives. I wasn't supposed to be there the day I first saw Daryl Ryler in our house. I came home sick from school, and our housekeeper at the time picked me up from school. I'd climbed up the stairs, dropped my backpack on the floor in my room, but instead of crawling into bed, I'd wanted to see my mom. The guest room they'd put her in was across the hall, and it was more like a hospital room than a bedroom. I wanted to read her the poem I'd written in language arts and tape it to her wall. She had a whole collection of them. The stranger didn't see me. The man was leaving her room, and I was about to ask him if he was today's nurse. "You should be in bed, Baron," the housekeeper had called from the bottom of the stairs.
You have fever. Make sure not to bother your mother. You don't want to make her sick. I never got to read her my poem. 20 minutes later, her nurse, a woman, not the man I'd seen, called an ambulance. Her respirator was clogged. Coincidence? I didn't think so. That's right, Dad. I know about you sending Daryl Ryler to kill her. I grinned and patted my father's stiff shoulder, watching his eyes dancing. That man I saw leaving Mom's room? It was Daryl Ryler. My father looked panicked, but he couldn't move a muscle. Realization washed over his face, and it was my time to strike harder. Yeah, about him. I bit back my smile, smoothing the white Egyptian cotton sheets of his bed. I was thrilled when they found him dead. I figured no one other than your gold-digging wife was going to miss him, and truly, his death was more of a public service when you think about it. How many people has Daryl Ryler wronged? How many felonies has he committed? How many Maries has he killed? My dad was still lucid. He must have put two and two together and deduced I'd killed Daryl. As usual, he thought the worst of his son. Dad actually managed to move his hand a little and his whole body shook. His eyes bulged as he gurgled, but my voice was low, and his nurses were too busy arguing about football down the hall. It's too late now. To change the will, switch, and give it all to Joe? Not when the doctors are questioning your mental competence. Who knows what's working inside that brain and what's not? No one gives a fuck about what you have to say anymore. I mean, your doctors are pretty amazed you're still alive. Honestly, I'm pretty amazed too. Why did you hold on for so long? You've got nothing but money. Nothing at all. Your works, your life. Got remarried to a woman who hates your guts, and you don't know anything about your son, other than the color of his eyes. The nurses stopped chatting, but when I turned around and flashed them a plastic smile, they resumed their conversation. My head twisted back to my writhing father. He shook so badly, I was pretty sure he was going to die right then and there. Doesn't matter who inherits everything. There's no one to protect Joe once you're dead. She'll be alone, defenseless. No brother to help her plot and scheme. Daryl's gone. I chuckled before remembering the expression on Help's face when I told her how Ryler had died. Despite everything, I didn't want her to think of me as a monster, as a killer. And you, I will destroy everything you worked for. Your company, your reputation, your assets. Your name. His eyes widened to a point they almost rolled out of their sockets. Tubes came out of his nose and wrists. He wanted to say something, but the only thing that came out were incoherent grunts. My father sounded like some kind of primitive animal, a zombie, which wasn't far from the fucking truth. What human being discarded his wife and the mother of his 9-year-old child? I came here to say goodbye, Dad, I said, sliding forward on his bed until my body pressed against his. I squeezed his immobile leg. His gaze screamed horror. There was so much he wanted to say, to shout, to me, to the nurses, but he was trapped inside himself. I'm going back to New York. Got more important things to take care of. I want you to know I loved you when I was a kid. It wasn't always like this. But I promise you now. I pressed my lips to his ear. He shuddered, trying to move his arms, but he was paralyzed. From the outside, to Josh and Slade, it probably looked like a sweet moment. I promise to shit over every single thing you've made part of the legacy you worked to create. I'm starting with this cold-ass mansion. I never liked it anyway. Then I'll liquidate the company you built with both hands and invest the money elsewhere. I wish you could watch me burn everything that matters to you, but you won't be able to. So it's probably best that you'll be dead. With that, I straightened and winked playfully at him. His face was so strained he was purple. This was how I wanted to remember him. Weak. Defeated. Ruined. I turned around and grinned to the nurses in the hallway. Bye, Dad. Help and I landed back in New York on Monday morning. I told her to go settle in at her new apartment because I knew she was desperate to see her baby sister, and for once, I wanted to stop acting like a douchebag to the woman I actually needed by my side. Of course, I failed to mention that the apartment I was living in upstairs was actually Dean's, because why the fuck did it matter? And because I didn't want to talk to her about Dean, ever. I, on the other hand, had a lot of work to do on the merger.
FHH was on the verge of merging two of the biggest pharmaceutical corporations in America. Yes, one of them was the one I did steal from Sergio and his company, as a matter of fact. It wasn't fair, but I didn't care about fair. I cared about getting my clients what they needed, and what we needed. Besides, it wasn't like Sergio's non-existent kids and family were going to starve. We were just rich bastards stealing clients from other rich bastards. This was our playground, and we were all bullies. Some of us were better at it than others. Having this massive transaction under our name was going to be life-altering, not only financially, but also in terms of our reputation. We couldn't let anything screw it up for us. Even though he'd hung up on me, Dean kept calling me like a desperate ex-girlfriend every day, and I kept on hitting ignore like the bastard who was about to steal his ex-girlfriend. Only she was never his. She was always mine. Part of the reason for my behavior was to teach him a lesson, and part of it was because I was enjoying the New York office too much to hand it back to him. I would, of course, but not yet. Christmas was approaching, and California Christmas sucked. Besides, I had nowhere to spend the holiday, and at least in New York, I was one of many lonely souls. Dean was going to spend the holidays with his family in Todos Santos, so really, I was doing him a favor. I arrived at the office in good spirits for a change. I didn't yell at anyone, I didn't break anything. I was nice to the secretaries and receptionists, and I did not lose my temper even once when a guy tried to cut in front of me when I hailed a taxi. I did step on his foot before I climbed into the car, bypassing him nonchalantly. Guess old habits die hard. When I arrived in front of my apartment building, my phone beeped. I'd received an email with a contract signed by both of the corporations. Successfully merged. This shit was going to be plastered on every financial website in North America within the hour. And it was all us. I couldn't contain my triumph. I didn't even have the chance to stare at the signatures on the screen before Jamie called me. I picked up. "Fuck! Man, we're rich!" He laughed. "Richer," I corrected dryly. "And you're welcome." "Richer," he bellowed in agreement. "And you're a fucking douchebag, bro." "This isn't news to me," I said, joining his laughter as I heard Mel and his baby Daria singing in the background. "I'm gonna celebrate with my family. Speak tomorrow, asshole." Jamie hung up. Trent called a few seconds later. "Motherfucking God, is it true?" he shouted, then chuckled. I rolled with him and snorted out a laugh, too. "It would appear that way. Listen, I'm at my parents. We're all gonna head for a pre-Christmas dinner with Dean's folks, but I'll call you tomorrow to kiss your ass about that deal, Vic. Hope you're doing something fun tonight. Bye." "Bye." I hung up. But I wasn't. My friends were going to celebrate with their families, and I was going to sit in an empty apartment that didn't even belong to me and eat takeout or fuck a woman without a last name that I was going to forget a few hours later. It was depressing. It was unfair in a whole different way than the unfair way I conducted business. And it was fucking unacceptable, considering there was something I wanted very much and that was within reach. Maybe that was how I ended up in front of her door. Logically, I had no business seeking her out. She was my PA and a woman I'd wronged. I should have just left her alone for once. But I didn't want to. What I wanted was to fuck her and get rid of my weird fixation on her once and for all. I knocked on the door, hoping to fuck Rosie wouldn't answer. I pounded my fist on her door again, and this time I heard footsteps. When she opened the door, my first instinct was to jerk her into my body and kiss the shit out of her until her lips bruised. But I couldn't, so I just smiled, tugging on my tie, loosening it. She had paint all over her face, brown and yellow and green. Earth tones. Her temples were misted with sweat, and her crazy lavender hair stuck to them. She wore graphic leggings and a baggy, paint-stained white shirt. Barefoot. Natural. Beautiful. "Hey," she said. Her earbuds were still hanging from her shoulders by a thin wire. "Sorry, I was listening to some music. I got the email about the merger. Congrats. Do you need me to do anything?"
"Yes. Wrap your lips around my dick and suck. Hard."
"Come to dinner with me," I said instead. I was breaking so many rules at once, my head spun like a motherfucker. 1, no dating. 2, no dating help. 3, no risking getting attached. 4, no deliberately putting myself in a vulnerable position. But I wanted to fuck her really bad, just so I could tell myself that I had after all these years, before I went back to L.A. She blinked a couple of times before blurting out, "No." It wasn't cold or cruel. She sounded surprised and a little confused. Still clutching the edges of the fiberglass door, covering it with paint, she elaborated.
It's not a good idea, and you know it.
The fuck not?
Well, I have about 500 reasons that come to mind, but let's start with the obvious ones. You're my boss, and you refer to me as help.
It's a term of endearment, I fired back, which I can drop if you don't like it. Go on. She let out a brittle laugh.
When you hired me, you promised you wanted to work together, nothing more.
Yeah, I huffed, growing impatient. Did she realize she was turning down what no one else had ever before been offered? And now I want you to come with me to grab some dinner. I plan to eat a steak, not your pussy. I may have overdone this one because help, fuck, Amelia, tried to slam the door on me at the exact moment I slid my foot inside the gap. She smashed the door against my foot, but I didn't care. Fine, we'll order in. What's your problem? You need to eat. Besides, Rosie's here too, right? You don't think I'll try and bang you in front of your sister, do you? The look on her face told me that yes, in fact, she was quite certain I'd try to bang her in front of her sister. I might have deserved that. I lifted three fingers in the air and sloped my chin up. Scout's honor. Hesitantly, she cracked the door open, but not all the way.
We can order in, but that's it.
She stepped aside, giving me permission to enter her little universe. I bulldozed into her apartment, into her life. The walls and kitchen were minimalist white, the floor a light-colored wood, the design open with very little furniture, white as well. It looked like an insane asylum. There was an easel at the corner of the living room next to the window overlooking the city, with a big stretched canvas of an in-progress painting, a cherry blossom tree overlooking a lake. It was vivid and sharp, like nature was within reach, which was a beautiful lie, of course. We were in a concrete kingdom imprisoned by skyscrapers, industrial smoke and mirrors. Interesting. So Help was an artist. It didn't surprise me. She was actually talented. Her shit wasn't tacky or good in a generic mainstream kind of way. Her art was thought-provoking, but not enough to be borderline crazy. It represented her quite perfectly, actually. Her back was to me. We both stared at the painting. Why cherry blossoms? I asked, 10 years later than I should have. She'd always had a thing for the tree. She painted other shit, too. Everything she owned had been doodled on. Textbooks, backpacks, clothes, arms. But she always came back to the cherry blossoms. Even her hair was the same shade as her favorite tree.
Because it's beautiful and, I don't know, the blooms are gone so fast.
I heard the smile on her lips.
When I was a kid, my grandma used to take me to D.C. every spring to the Cherry Blossom Festival. Just me. I used to wait for it all year long. We never had much money, so to spend a day there, to go to a barbecue restaurant afterward, it was a big thing for me. Huge. Then she got sick when I was 7. Cancer. It took a while. I didn't really understand the concept of her dying, going away and never coming back, so she told me about the Japanese sakura. People in Japan travel from all over to see the trees at their prime. Cherry blossom season is short but breathtaking, and after the blossoms fade, the flowers fall to the ground, scattered by the wind and rain. Grandma said that the cherry blossom was life, sweet and beautiful but so darn short. Too short not to do what you want to do, too short to not spend it with the people you love.
Her eyes closed slowly as she took a deep breath. She stopped talking, and I stopped fucking breathing, because I knew what made her stop. Me. Everything I did. I prevented her from spending time with some of these people, her parents, her sister, for my own selfish reasons when she was only 18.
Holy cow, I'm a buzzkill.
She let out a breathless chuckle.
Sorry.
Don't be. I swallowed, taking a wide step so we stood flush next to each other, still observing the painting. Shit happens. My mom died when I was 9.
I know.
Her tone was somber, but not anxious. Normally people didn't like it when you brought up your dead mother. Grief was an uncomfortable emotion to deal with.
That must have been hard.
Well, you said you were a buzzkill. My competitive side inspired me to bring my A game. I shrugged, my voice even.
Vicious.
She laughed again, this time turning to me, giving me that look teachers give their students when they're disappointed with them. I grinned. Dead mother beats dead grandmother every day, and you fucking know it. She swatted my shoulder but couldn't hide her smile.
You're horrible.
Horribly sexy, yes.
We ordered Vietnamese, and I told her how my mom got injured in a car crash, then died when I was 9. The usual details, except for the really sordid stuff about who made it happen. She was covered in paint, so we sat on the drop cloth under the easel. It wasn't my thing, but I didn't mind. The reason I told her about my mom was simple. I didn't want to bail on her ass if push came to shove. If I was going to corrupt her morally, I needed more ammo. She cried when I told her about how I found out my mother was dead. My dad was away on an urgent business trip, so our housekeeper told me, between my hiccups and sniffs. There were a lot of reasons why I didn't tell her the whole truth, the one I'd kept to myself all those years. The reasons now weren't that different than what they'd been back then. I was still ashamed I hadn't realized what Dad and Joe were talking about doing when I was 9. I'd felt guilty all these years, wondering if I could have saved my mom, warned her, told someone. Which was probably stupid, because who would have believed a 9-year-old? And afterward, if someone did believe me, what then? My mom would still be dead, and it could have been even worse for me. The shame, the pity, the gossip if there was a trial. When your dad sends his mistress's brother to pull a plug on your mother? Yeah, there was no coming back from that sob story. I would have been forever labeled as that poor kid. I wasn't anyone's poor kid. I was a rich man. Powerful in people's eyes, and I intended to keep it that way. I trusted Amelia. I knew I could confide in her. She'd kept our secret under wraps from everyone in high school. I trusted her to keep the one about my scars, too. The way she looked at me when we sat on her drop cloth, I was pretty fucking sure my $900 slacks were stained with paint, made me want to tell her the rest. But I didn't want her to think about me what I used to think about myself, that I'd made a mistake in keeping quiet. That none of it would have happened if I'd told someone. That I could have stopped it all before it started. That I was stupid. Weak.
Wish she'd have given me more of a chance to be there for you when I lived there, she murmured, looking down at her thighs and fighting more tears.
I wanted to touch her, but I didn't want a hug. I needed to fuck her until every inch of her flesh was raw. I smiled politely. See? We all have our cherry blossom story. I looked around, suddenly anxious to stop talking. Where the fuck is Rosie, anyway? I was starting to feel the way I did before, when she lived so close I could see into her bedroom window. I couldn't pin that feeling down. Not then, and not now. I just knew that it was unacceptable. I had enough fucking fires to put out in my personal life without creating another shitstorm. She muttered something about calling her sister and checking up on her and got up exactly as the doorbell chimed. She twisted her head to me and quirked an eyebrow as if to say, "What are the odds?" and sashayed to the door to get our food. It was the delivery guy. The smell of our hot, spicy food carried all the way to where I sat while she made small talk with the guy. Typical Amelia, nice to everyone and their mothers. Amelia arranged some plates on our makeshift picnic blanket and opened a bottle of wine that she'd probably bought from the Dollar Tree, but dinner was nicer than the nicest ones I'd had in the last couple of years. We ate in silence, and that was okay. Because Amelia wasn't the type of girl who hurried to fill the air with meaningless chatter. She liked silence. Like me. Like my mom. Then again, it had been a while since I'd sat down for dinner with someone who wasn't one of the four hotholes or my stepmother. "Tell me something bad about you," I said out of nowhere.
"Something bad?"
She took a swig straight from the bottle and placed it on the floor next to her thigh, wiggling her pursed lips from side to side. She was thinking. Yeah, something that's less noble than Little Miss Perfect helping her sick sister by working 2 jobs. She rolled her eyes at me but smiled, struggling to come up with something. When she did, she seemed half elated.
"I paint with oil paint."
Holy fuck, that's badass. I bit my lower lip and shook my head. She laughed and swatted my shoulder, again. And yes, Amelia LeBlanc wanted to fuck me as much as I wanted to fuck her. It was written all over her body language.
"Let me finish. I'm cautious. I take my time. Oils take a century to dry. You need to open the windows and let them air dry. But I like how the colors are vibrant and the painting looks so real. Oil paint is actually pretty toxic. It's terrible for Rosie's lungs, but I still use it because I hate acrylic."
She sighed, blushing a little. Hot damn. Help was admitting to doing something selfish. She was definitely cracking. I placed my hands over my temples and shook my head, feigning shock. "Mind-blowing shit, LeBlanc. Next thing you'll tell me, you pay your taxes after April 15th.
I like to live on the edge.
She shrugged and sucked a noodle between her lips using chopsticks. I almost shoved away the paper takeout containers and pinned her to the drop cloth. Almost. But it was becoming clearer to me that I wouldn't be able to hold myself back for long. I wanted that pussy, and I deserved it. It was mine. "I'm not all good," she said, slurping more food. I loved how she ate like she didn't give a fuck that I was watching her. "Nobody's all good, just like nobody's all bad." I licked my lower lip, and she did the same. She dropped her chopsticks and chanced another glance at me. I continued eating, pretending I didn't give a damn. "Sometimes I think you're all bad," she said, but I knew she didn't really mean it. I knew Amelia LeBlanc well enough to know she saw the goodness in everyone, even assholes like me. Care to test that theory? I slurped a noodle between my lips and winked. "That could make you feel pretty fucking good. Just say the word." She laughed, and it felt good in my chest. Warm, even. "Is that your official pickup line? If so, I'm half suspecting you're still a virgin." She wrinkled her nose. Yes, it was on. So fucking on. She was charmed. I recognized it when women were affected. Smelled it for miles, like a shark out for blood. I tossed my empty takeout box aside and moved closer to her. She didn't retreat. She wanted it. Wanted my mouth on hers. Wanted my hands buried in her cherry blossom hair and my body grinding against hers. It was happening. Finally. I leaned in. She stopped breathing and looked down, waiting, expecting, wanting. It took every ounce of fucking self-control in me to lift my hand and brush her delicate neck instead of pinning her wildly to the floor and ripping her stupid leggings from her thighs. She released a breath, lolling her head to the side.
"I'm going to regret this."
Her voice was tiny, like her. "Probably," I agreed, "but it'll be worth it." My lips made the journey from her neck to their final destination, to where they fucking belonged from day one. Her warm breath tickled my flesh, and I wanted her to suffocate me with her kiss. I resisted the urge to ball my fists, unexpectedly worried about how this would go down. I was starving for her. My next move wasn't going to be a calculated one, and that was the first time I'd felt that way about anything in a long time. I was so close that I was able to feel her skin meeting mine, the little lines of her red lips brushing mine when the door unlocked and fucking Rosie walked in. Amelia withdrew herself from me immediately before I had a chance to finish the job and started collecting the takeout containers littered around us.
"Rosie,"
her voice pitched high.
"What took you so long? I got you some noodle soup. It will warm you right up."
She quickly disappeared into the kitchen behind a long white wall. I leaned back on my forearms on the drop cloth, staring at grown-up Rosie like she'd pissed in my food. She returned a feisty look in my direction. Oddly, it made me feel like a teenager all over again.
"If you hurt her, I will kill you."
She pointed her finger at me for emphasis. I was perfectly still, giving zero fucks about this 5'4" gnome firing threats at me like she was Rambo. Cock-blocking me first and threatening me? Should I remind you that the only reason you're not living in a sewer with that rat who trains the Ninja Turtles is because of my generosity? I slanted my head sideways, flashing her my arrogant smirk. It was the exact one that drove men insane with anger and women mad with lust. Rosie, of course, was immune to my charm. Using her to get her sister's attention 10 years ago had killed every good thought she'd had about me. Not that she'd had many, even before we kissed. In fact, I was pretty sure our lips had only locked because she was irritated by my lack of attention. I was the only teenager with a dick at All Saints who hadn't been consumed with impressing her. Of course, I was fully occupied with obsessing over her older sister. Generosity, my ass. She walked deeper into the room. Honestly, for a chick who suffered from a congenital lung disease, she looked pretty perky to me.
"I don't know what you've got planned for her, but if it's vicious like you, I'm not going to let you get away with it."
I needed to stop this exchange before Amelia came back to the living room and Rosie shit all over my progress with her. Both sisters were feisty, but while Amelia was sassy in a "I'm a good person but can engage in fun banter" kind of way, Rosie was more from the "I'll stab you in your sleep if you piss me off" school. It was certainly not the only reason why I preferred Amelia to her sister, but it was part of it. They looked the same, but they didn't feel the same. Not by a fucking long shot. "My intentions are pure," I lied. "I don't believe you," Rosie snapped. "Too fucking bad because I'm not going anywhere, so you better get used to me." I got up. I was a little woozy from the cheap wine and lack of sleep, but high as fuck on everything else that had happened that evening. My high school obsession strode back into the living room with a bowl of soup and an apologetic smile.
Vic was just leaving. Our company signed a huge deal today. He needed to brief me about tomorrow morning, she explained.
I hated that she felt like she owed her sister some sort of an explanation. I'll see you tomorrow at the office. I smoothed my shirt with my palm. Emilia nodded, but looked a million miles away from where we were just moments ago. That fucking sparkle in her eyes had died. Her sister's face must have reminded her how much of a douchebag I was.
Again, Emilia cleared her throat, her tone professional. Congrats on the merger.
I left with my throbbing dick trying to worm its way out of my pants to the nearest high-class hooker in this zip code. I didn't know New York well enough to have a steady fuck here, but it didn't matter anyway. The storm that brewed in me was going to calm only when my cock was deep inside Emilia LeBlanc and not a moment sooner. As I punched the elevator button and ran my hand through my hair, something strange dawned on me, and for the first time in years I had a clear idea of what I wanted from life that had nothing to do with my career, money, or ruining Joe and Dad. I wanted Emilia. I wanted to kiss her whenever I felt like it. I wanted to mark her in a million different ways. I told Rosie the truth. I wasn't going anywhere. I was staying in New York until my dad died, until Josephine became penniless, and until I banged Emilia like I'd wanted to when I was 18. In the elevator up to the penthouse, my phone pinged with a message from Dean. Just a friendly reminder. I'll be coming back to New York soon. If I were you, I'd run now before I get to you. I didn't even grace his bullshit with a reply. Just walked into his apartment with its tinted floor-to-ceiling windows and started packing his shit for him, throwing his expensive suits into his designer garment bags. We weren't switching back anytime soon. Not until I got what I wanted. He was staying in L.A., whether he liked it or not.
Chapter 15 Emilia Rosie shook her head, her eyes following my every movement. She didn't need to do anything. I knew what she had to say. Shut up about it, I warned, cleaning the area around the easel and giving her my back while she sat at the dining table and watched me in my painting corner. She kept staring at me, not touching her soup. I didn't regret almost kissing Vicious. For once in my life, I hadn't played it safe. I wasn't cautious. I didn't paint my life in oil colors. I'd reached for acrylic, quick to dry, and settled on it. Whatever it was I wanted with him. Fine, Rosie bit out. But for the record, I warned you. She slid a manila envelope across the white dining table. I opened it and stared at the money, ignoring her while counting it. Instead of feeling happy about selling a painting, I was filled with unease. Was I about to make a huge mistake by messing around with Vicious? Probably. But I couldn't deny myself what I wanted, and we weren't kids anymore. This was happening. He was going to use me, and I was going to use him back. It was a mistake of epic proportions. I knew that. And just like any huge mistake, payback was going to be painful. Sadly, it was a price I was willing to pay. The next morning, I arrived early at the office. I wasn't sure why, but I wanted everything to be in perfect order. For the first time, Vicious's coffee and breakfast were waiting for him on his desk. I closeted myself inside my office, two doors down from his, and booked Rosie a plane ticket to San Diego. I wanted her to spend Christmas with our parents. Truly, there was nothing I wanted more than to tag along with her and make it an epic family week. But one last-minute ticket was expensive enough, and I needed to be financially cautious. In any case, I was certain Vicious wouldn't give me the time off. Sending Rosie to the other side of the country had nothing to do with her warning last night. Right. After I sent her a text with the surprise ticket, I sorted through Vicious's email. I responded to requests from charity organizers, cleaned up the junk, and flagged messages from investors that he needed to answer himself. His inbox was so career-focused, it was almost sad. There was nothing personal, except some banter with Jamie and Trent and a clipped question about the merger from Dean. I wasn't snooping. It was part of my job description to keep his inbox in order. It wasn't a part of my job description to check out his Facebook interactions and read through every single exchange he'd had with a female in the last 6 months, but I took the liberty of doing that too, because I was just hardworking like that. I yelped and jumped to my feet when I realized he was standing at my door, staring me down like I was his breakfast.
Trying to watch porn in the office again?
He said while I blushed.
We have security measures for that. Those websites are blocked.
I let out a nervous laugh and brushed my hair from my forehead. He looked too good to be so evil. Vicious was in another one of his dark suits, but he'd discarded the jacket and rolled up his shirt sleeves, exposing muscular forearms peppered with a smattering of that L.A. sun, and those scars that made my heart beat erratically. The only thing I could think about was how we'd almost kissed last night, and how I'd silently cursed Rosie while I fixed her soup for her in the kitchen after I'd had to pull away from him. I quirked an eyebrow at him and leaned back. Your IT people are doing a terrible job. I've been watching snuff all morning. He laughed, and his amusement looked genuine, rare and brief like cherry blossoms in the spring. But just like the flowers, it died quickly.
I didn't peg you for a kink girl, Amelia.
He tucked his hands in his pockets.
Whatever floats your boat, I'd be happy to be captain.
Tacky, I pretended to gag. And now I'm 99% sure you are a virgin. I was teasing him, and I didn't care anymore. Yes, he was a damaged person, but I now knew there might be reasons for that. No, I wouldn't ever forgive him for what he'd done to me. But that didn't mean I couldn't have some fun with him until I dug out of my financial mess. Might as well take him up on every single thing he offered while I could, because that's essentially what we were doing. Using one another. Vicious's eyes licked my body head to toe, slow and taunting, then landed on my face.
Have your ass in my office in 10 minutes. We need to tie up a few loose ends with the merger.
With that, he left, closing the door behind him. I didn't have time to catch my breath before my phone rang. I answered it with a grin. Please tell me you're coming with me, Rosie exclaimed. I was glad she was feeling better, and even happier that she was so excited about seeing our parents again. Sorry, little Rose. I have a ton of work, and besides, I've wanted the new apartment to myself ever since I walked in. I'm going to put Panic at the Disco on full blast, dance naked, eat pizza, and paint while you're gone. Despite a pang of sadness at not being there with my family, this actually sounded like a great idea. It would certainly top our last two Christmases, one of which ended up with me giving Rosie a half-empty bottle of perfume, though she pretended it was brand new. I'm not going anywhere without you, you crazy hoe. Not on Christmas. Rosie, I sighed, pushing my office chair back from my desk and standing up. I spent the next 10 minutes in the bathroom, multitasking, trying to convince her, and brushing my hair with my fingers, trying to look good. You're being ridiculous. I just saw Mama and Daddy. It's been 2 years since you've seen them. Please. Come with me, she insisted again. I want to save some money. You make a fortune. Now, maybe, but who knows what'll happen in a month or two. Silence fell. She knew I was right. I was still looking for another job, knowing this one was only temporary. Vicious said so himself. He didn't even live in New York year-round. I gave her the final push. Seriously, do you realize how long it's been since I've had a place all to myself? I'll actually hold it against you forever if you waste the ticket. It's non-refundable. I don't need to see your sorry face all through Christmas anyway. Go. I love you, she said with a sad chuckle. Right back at you, sister, I smiled. Now go pack. You have a flight to catch in a few hours.
Okay, but did you tell Mama about Rat? I thought I'd mention I'm adopting a pet snake with him.
Rat? I scrunched my nose.
My biker boyfriend.
I laughed. Oh, yeah, she knows you're seeing him. Said she'd love to meet him sometime soon, and that there's vermin in the Spencer's attic anyway, so the snake will feel right at home. On my way to Vicious's office, I desperately tried to regulate my heartbeats. What was I doing, wanting to have a fling with the man who'd ruined my life? It was inexcusable. But I wanted him, and I was tired of depriving myself of what I wanted. I knocked on his door, as was expected of me, and rubbed my hands over my thighs, throwing a glance at the glass reception desk at Patty, who sent me a warm smile. I smiled back.
Come in,
Vicious growled. He was standing behind his own glass desk, his palms flat against it.
About the merger?
I clutched my iPad to my chest. I felt pretty proud about being able to form coherent sentences, considering my physical reaction to him.
You wanted to go through a few things?
Turn around and face the door,
he ordered, completely ignoring my question. He was still reading something on his laptop screen. I frowned.
Excuse me? Why?
Because I'm your boss, and I tell you what the fuck to do.
He lifted his head from the screen, his gaze piercing the thin layer of faux confidence I wore. His face was expressionless, but his hooded eyes gleamed. The way he looked at me, with his dark blue irises undressing me item by item, made me want to throw myself at him, like all the other shameless girls from high school. Slowly, I spun and looked at the door, my heart galloping, filling my ears with violent thuds. I was just glad that, unlike the rest of the offices down the hall, his had only a single glass wall. The door in the center was made of solid black wood.
Is this about last night?
I asked.
No.
I felt each and every one of his footsteps, shaking my core from the inside. My womb clenched, and a hot wave of lust crashed against my pelvis. In seconds, his body was flush against mine from behind, and it was warmer than I remembered. Larger. Even more intoxicating than when he was 18. His lips found the sensitive spot on my neck, brushing, not kissing, teasing me with the promise of something more.
It's about you being a liar when you were 17. And it's about you still being a liar when you're 27. You fucked one of my best friends, when really, you wanted to fuck me. It's time to make amends, Miss LeBlanc.
He snaked his arm around my shoulder, cupping my cheek and dragging my head back to meet his chest. His lips found my temple, and they smelled of coffee, lust, and him.
I'm done playing kitty games with you,
he rasped, his voice so low, too low, and I felt his hot mouth moving on my skin.
We're both at the same place now, both single and hot for each other. This is happening. We're fucking. Say yes.
Vicious. I started, but then he pulled my hair gently, extending my neck and reaching his free hand to pull my waist, my butt hitting his thick, throbbing erection. My rear was pressed against his groin, and I felt how much he wanted me. My need for him was just as strong. A warm, heady feeling made my thighs quiver and clench. I wanted to take a bite of the forbidden fruit I'd convinced myself was poisonous. He gave me pain. But, ironically, this pain gave me life.
Say yes,
he repeated. I needed to say no, but wanted to say yes, so I settled for a little voiceless nod.
Good girl,
he breathed.
I knew you'd come around, as long as you didn't have to look me in the eye when you admitted it.
He spun me around, and before I could say something, anything, his mouth attacked mine. Every doubt I'd had evaporated. His tongue parted my lips, this time demanding, not asking, and I remembered how I hadn't allowed that to happen the first time we'd kissed. Now, there was no barrier. There was no Dean, no hot holes, and no Toto Santos.
just the two hungry, savage adults who wanted to rip each other to shreds. I wanted to dissolve into smoke, to crawl into him and never leave. It was crazy, but that was how much I craved this man. His mouth was hot, his kiss ravenous and rough, like he was trying to erase every trace of every other man who'd ever tasted me, an erratic rhythm that made my heart skip several beats. I was so aroused, I thought I was going to die right there in his arms if he didn't peel my clothes off. But I couldn't ask him for it. For one thing, it was 9 in the morning and the floor was packed with colleagues. When he grabbed me by my butt and raised my body so my legs wrapped around his waist, I knew we were seconds from doing something very unprofessional against his office door. "People might see us," I moaned into his lips.
"And?"
His teeth captured my lower lip gently and pulled it into his mouth. He sucked on it hard. His eyes were hooded with something other than boredom. The fact that it was me who made him this way made my heart flutter. "And it's grossly unprofessional," I said, voicing my thoughts. But I didn't pull away. He was right. We'd wanted each other all along in high school. I'd been foolish to try and translate my emotions for him into something with one of his best friends, and he'd been hateful to chase me away instead of claiming me the way he should have. It was obvious we had no future. Too many terrible things had happened between us. But that didn't mean we couldn't enjoy the present until he was done with his revenge and went back to his life in L.A.
"Emilia,"
his baritone rumbled in my ear. He didn't call me Millie, but at least he'd stopped calling me help.
"I don't give a fuck who sees us, and it's probably better if they know not to fuck around with what belongs to me."
"What about the company rules you warned Floyd about?"
"Fuck the rules. I own the company."
Despite his words and his touch, I managed to place my palms on his chest and push him away. My lips throbbed with our searing kiss, and I felt the thump of my pulse at my temple. "We can't do this here," I argued, trying to convince both him and myself. He didn't look too fazed, but walked to his desk and grabbed his keys and phone. He pressed his finger to his intercom, his gaze still on me.
"Receptionist," he barked. "Cancel all my shit for today. You've got access to Miss LeBlanc's computer. My schedule's in there."
"Is everything okay?" I heard Patty's soft, feminine voice from the other end of the line.
"I'm taking a sick day, and my PA needs to tend to me."
He hung up and stacked his folders into a neat pile, ignoring me again. I knew exactly what it meant, and my heart raced wildly in my chest. Tapping my chin, I said, "Sick, huh?"
"Yes."
He didn't even look up.
"I'm fucking sick of not being inside you where I should have been a long time ago. Now let's go."
It felt like the walk of shame as we made the long trip from his office to the elevator, with him clasping my elbow possessively, like a guard escorting me from the premises. Everybody was looking at us, and I do mean everybody. Eyeing us through the glass walls of their offices, peeking from the kitchen area and stealing glances from behind the reception space. I didn't care as much as I probably should have. This wasn't a legitimate job, and Vicious wasn't a legitimate boss. It was an arrangement that was going to be over soon, so I had to grab whatever I could before my time was up. As we both stepped into the elevator, another suited employee tried to join us.
"Leave,"
Vicious said simply, and the man walked out of the elevator without even a flinch. My mouth fell open, and Vicious punched the button that closed the door and slammed my body against the silver wall.
Now, where were we?
I was praying no one else would witness the fact that Vicious was a few seconds from screwing the life out of me. But that hope was futile. By the time the elevator pinged open and we stumbled out to the busy lobby of the building, my lip was cut from one of our wild kisses. I was bleeding. To be fair, I'd bitten him first, but I was teasing him. He, on the other hand, was... insane was the accurate word. Our hurried steps carried us toward the exit, and I knew our apartments were only a short 10-minute walk away. but it felt weird to make this journey on foot while we were so flustered and hot for one another. My panties were so soaked, I hoped people weren't able to see it through my Christmas-themed leggings. Luckily, they were made out of a thick fabric. Vicious continued to guide me by my elbow, which should have felt gallant and flattering, but I had zero illusions about what this was. I knew him well enough, despite all these years, to know romance was simply not on the menu for him. He was as emotionally available as a jackhammer. This was pure lust, exploding after a decade of simmering quietly, brewed by frustration, jealousy, and hate. Once we walked through the revolving door, rushing down the street through the December chill and the crowds of Christmas shoppers, I started laughing. We were walking so fast that our butts might as well have been on fire.
Do I want to know what's funny?
His face looked strained, and I bit down another chuckle. I shouldn't have laughed. I had blood on my lower lip, and he was sporting a visible erection, but he looked so serious, like he was ushering me to the ER and not to his bed. Just the way we're acting, like two high schoolers who just found out one of them has an empty house, I said, fighting another burst of giggles. He squeezed my elbow, and we cut the corner, almost jogging. My laughing stopped when we walked through the glass doors to the skyscraper where we lived. Vicious punched the elevator button 3 times in a row and started pacing, waiting for it to ping open. He ran his hand through his inky black hair. Rosie's home, I said, swallowing hard. He turned around to look at me, and I swear it looked like his erection was going to break through his zipper, or his zipper was going to break his erection. Either way, it was going to hurt.
We'll go up to the penthouse,
he said, shoving a hand deeper into his tousled hair and tugging impatiently. She could bump into us in the elevator, or the hallway, or... Truly, I didn't care about Rosie catching us. I was a grown-up, and besides, we'd both brought men over to our old studio on occasion. When it happened, the other sister would make herself scarce. Nope, I was clearly stalling, and I didn't know why.
Fine, we'll grab a taxi. The Mandarin isn't that far. It's a long shot this time of the year, but they might have a room or two available. If not, there's always the bathroom at Starbucks.
He turned around and started stalking toward the entrance. I grabbed his hand and stopped him, and our eyes met. Really, Vicious? After 10 years of waiting, that's how you want to do this? In a hotel? In the middle of the morning?
Fuck.
His jaw ticked and he exhaled, closing his eyes.
What did you think was gonna happen when we ditched work? That we would catch a Jennifer Lawrence movie under the fucking covers?
He looked so on edge, I thought he was going to detonate on the marble floor. I flattened my palm against the collar of his dress shirt, and that seemed to soothe him a little. I bought Rosie a plane ticket to fly home to see her parents. She's supposed to pick up her meds around 6, then go to the airport straight from there. We can still go back to the office and come back here after she's gone.
Fuck no,
he almost spat.
We're spending today alone.
When he didn't move, just stared at me like he was going to take me on the floor, I tangled my fingers together, twisting them. I could show you New York.
What?
His brows furrowed. Show you New York. Show you where I like to go, where I like to eat. Show you why it's so much better than L.A., why Frank Sinatra and Woody Allen and Scorsese rhapsodize about this crazy place with the crazy weather like it's paradise.
Sweetheart, I don't do monogamy.
He tisked like I had asked him if he could part the sea.
And that sounds a lot like a date.
It's not, I protested, feeling my face heat. Also, I vividly remember you asking me to go to dinner with you yesterday. What's changed?
That wasn't a date. I was just really fucking hungry.
Well, what makes you think I'd like to date someone as hateful and cold as you anyway? I tilted my head like a bird, my eyes blazing with heat.
I don't know. I don't care. And I don't do dates,
he said again, taking a step back and shaking his head. His cheeks flushed pink, and this time it wasn't only from the cold. Sweet Jesus and his holy crew. At this point, I'd had enough of this nonsense, so I decided to kill the conversation. Really? I snorted. Really? He enunciated. So, if I tell you I want to redo our senior year in one day, to go ice skating at Rockefeller Center and let you get to second base like two teenagers. I erased the gap between us, kissing a sliver of his exposed neck and his breath stilled. And go eat at PJ Clark's and move to third base in the bathroom. I rasped the words against his hot flesh and dragged my eyes up to meet his stormy ones. And end the day at a Broadway show where I'd do something very inappropriate under your seat. We melted into each other, and sure enough, I felt the swelling in his slacks getting bigger against my stomach. You'd say no? His face was the funniest thing on earth as it moved from surprise to eager, then finally to turned on. Fuck, he muttered, pressing his hard cock against me. From the outside, it must have looked like we were sharing the dirtiest hug ever. I'm about to go ice skating for a hand job, and I'm not even 16 anymore. You're totally going on a day date, I joked. He rolled his eyes, but followed me back outside and into the nearest subway station, buttoning his peacoat to cover the massive bulge between his legs. Lead the way. Despite my teasing, I didn't really plan to take him ice skating, but I wasn't going to tell him that just yet. I actually enjoyed watching him sitting opposite me on the subway, jaw grinding, brows creased, eyes locked on mine. We were oblivious to the noise around us, the damp, stinky coats brushing against us, the Kindles, paperbacks, and takeout bags that smelled like Asian food and were nudged into our ribs. It was just us. I couldn't remember the last time I'd spent the day having fun in the city without thinking about picking up more shifts or running errands. I also couldn't remember the last time I spent the day with a man who made my knees weak, my breath erratic, and my heart feel like it didn't belong to me anymore. This means nothing, he said from across my seat, twisting my own words from yesterday when I let